Hi, this is Beth Below, and you're listening to a special edition of the Introvert Entrepreneur Podcast. This is a teleclass that I hosted on August 26th, 2010. The topic was self-talk, and the title of the teleclass was Mind Over Chatter 101, Silencing Your Energy Vampires. Welcome, and I'm really glad that you all are here today, because this is a topic that is near and dear to my heart, and that I've been working on and reflecting and thinking about for a couple of years now. So, as I said before, my name is Beth, and I'm a certified professional coach, and I'm founder of The Introvert Entrepreneur, and I serve clients from across the country from my home base in Tacoma, Washington. And my work involves helping people create and step through doors when all they saw before were walls. And as introverts, we do this by understanding, owning, and leveraging our strengths. Because when we own who we are and what we have to offer, doors open and choices become clear. So we're going to spend the next, 30 to 40 minutes or so talking about, first we're going to talk about what is self-talk, or as I call it, chatter, and why we should even care about it. Then I'll describe the different ways that chatter sucks up our energy and share some other ways that chatter comes disguised as comfort, and safety, modesty, and excuses. And during this part, I'll be offering up a few questions that you might want to reflect on and ask yourself at a future time. So if you don't already have some in front of you, you might want to grab some pen and paper to have that handy. And then finally, I'll offer three different ideas for beginning to shift your relationship with your internal energy vampires. So to jump right in and get started, what is chatter and why does it matter? So I use the word chatter because I love this definition from the American Heritage Dictionary. It says, chatter is to utter in a rapid, usually thoughtless way, to talk foolishly without stopping, noisy talk, click repeatedly or uncontrollably, talk socially without exchanging too much information, speak about unimportant matters rapidly and incessantly, make noise as if chattering away. And as introverts, we know that we're probably not prone to a lot of incessant chatter and noise happening externally when we're talking to other people. Most of our chatter happens inside of our heads, and that's our self-talk. And that definition really captures the often unintentional nature of our thoughts and the way we repeat things to ourselves constantly. We replay conversations and we forget to be really still in our minds and invite in silence. Because as introverts, we have a really rich inner life, and the thoughts that are in that inner life can get rather noisy. At least I know they do for me, and they block out the experience that I can be having with the present moment and with everything around me. And what I've noticed over the past few years of really thinking about this and studying it is that most of the statements and questions that come up only serve to judge our situation, our choices, and our abilities. We spend too much time thinking without an awareness of what we're really telling ourselves. And often, this chatter and our thoughts are dominated by old tape loops about our abilities. So something like, I'm too shy to talk to him, or I'm not sure I can do it. There are also societal norms that tell us what we should and shouldn't do. You should go out and be more social, or you shouldn't take so much time for yourself. There's also a persistent voice that provides excuses for us to stay with what's familiar and safe. So that might sound like, it'll change everything if I quit this job, or I don't deserve a second chance with her anyway. And the undeniable truth is that our chatterbox is with us 24/7, and it's a really powerful presence. It has the power to move us forward or to hold us back. Some of this chatter is stream of consciousness thinking that simply distracts us or causes some temporary stress, like the laundry list of to-dos that are going through our head, or wondering, where in the world did I leave my keys? Those are some of the examples of everyday chatter that is part of the ongoing conversation we have with ourselves. There's also chatter that helps us process through situations and evaluate what's happening in our lives. It might be my introverted personality, but I spend a lot of my chatter time replaying conversations that happened earlier in the day, composing responses in my head, and thinking forward to anticipated interactions and confrontations. A certain amount of this is just the way I am. I like to be prepared. And this can lead me to projecting forward and making assumptions about what might happen, which is part of what causes stress and anxiety. So if we consider the processing time and the random and to-do list thoughts, what remains after that is the chatter that we're going to be focusing on and that what we want to examine our relationship to. And when our chatter is holding us back, when it's that chatter that is the self-talk that's fear-based, it thinks it's protecting us from taking risks and from changing or from doing something that might expose us to failure. And it's really an expression of fear. Our thoughts usually have something to do with whatever did or didn't happen yesterday, or whatever may or may not happen tomorrow. So these thoughts put us in the past and put us in the future and rarely help us stay in the present moment. And one thing to be clear about, that even courageous and seemingly fearless people have a chatterbox, and they experience fear on their journey. What separates them from those who get tripped up by the chatter is that they have a particular way they choose to view the situation. They make a choice to channel the energy of the chatter into forward-moving action. Shifting our view is not as easy as saying, well, I just won't think that way anymore, or I'll just stop those negative thoughts. I just won't be afraid anymore. If you're impatient with the chatter, you might think, well, it's like flipping a switch. Or you hear some of this, just think positive, or turn that frown upside down. And we all know it's not quite that simple, because these language patterns that we have are fairly ingrained. We've heard them from the time, we understood what people were saying to us. And we were sponges back then, picking it all up. And so they're so ingrained that we don't even sometimes know that they're there. And that's one of the reasons why I do these classes and share this information. I'm probably not the first person to tell you this stuff, and I'm sure I won't be the last. But I found that I continually am practicing and raising my awareness of these things. And it's always helpful to have kind of a refresher course and a reminder to bring these things back up into my present mind. So the good news is that thinking to yourself, well, I just won't think that way anymore, represents an acknowledgement that you have a choice, which is really the critical first step. And with that, you can really start to raise your awareness and start to make change. So through my coaching work with clients, I've experienced power and clarity that I've witnessed that in my clients when they're able to pull fearful thoughts out of the darkness and into the light, where they rarely stand up to scrutiny. Because the truth about that negative self-talk or the fear-based self-talk is that it needs to be heard. You can't just shove it to the back of the closet and say, well, I'm not going to pay any attention to you. Those thoughts want to be heard because they think they're keeping you safe. And giving them a voice and listening to them is not about giving them power or focusing on fear and negativity. It's about putting fear in its proper place so you can focus on building up your strengths. And with that awareness, you can make the intentional choice to replace the chatter in your brain with affirmative, nurturing thoughts. And as I go through this, one thing I also want to point out that I hope might provide a reframe for people is that we often hear about negative self-talk and positive self-talk, or good self-talk and bad self-talk. And I think those terms are very loaded and they're very judgmental. Because it makes it sound like, well, you have to get rid of what's negative and you have to get rid of what's bad and you should only have what's good and positive. When, like I said before, the truth is that we need a balance of both because they both serve a function for us. So I like to think of chatter in terms of where it's coming from, whether it's coming from a place of love or it's coming from a place of fear. Because we... There's this great saying that's in one of Wayne Dyer's books, Excuses Be Gone, and it's an English proverb, and it says, fear knocked on the door, love answered, and no one was there. So it's acknowledging that there is fear, and it knocks on our door, and it is present. And if we're able to come from that place of love, answer with love, then fear doesn't really have, it loses its power. So I want to offer that little quote up to you because that is one of my favorites. So as introverts, we gain energy from solitude and reflection. And I also believe we gain energy from coming from that place of love. Think for a moment about the last time you were feeling a good amount of fear or worry or doubt and how much that drained energy from your mind and your body. We are careful stewards of our energy, and we benefit from an awareness of our thought patterns and being intentional about shifting them. And that's what the rest of this class is all about. So I'm going to share with you five different disguises that fear-based self-talk takes on. And those take the form of disclaimers, assumptions, limiting beliefs, lack of choice, and conditional statements. Before I leap into those, I want to share a short parable. And this comes from Harold Kushner in his book, Living a Life That Matters. He shares, a Native American elder once described his own inner struggles in this manner. Inside of me, there are two dogs. One of the dogs is mean. The other dog is good. The mean dog fights the good dog all the time. When asked which dog wins, the elder reflected a moment and replied, the one I feed the most. And I love many things about this very short story. One is that it acknowledges that, again, fear and love, good and mean, coexist within us, and that we can acknowledge them both. And it's not, you notice the elder didn't say, I tried to get rid of the mean dog. He's saying it's about nurturing the good dog. And it demonstrates that we have a choice about this. So what I'm going to be highlighting here are some of the ways that mean dog barks at us and shows up. And then we'll shift and we'll talk about how we can bring more nourishment to the good dog. So first are disclaimers. This is one of my favorites. It's one of the ones that I first noticed were cropping up during my studies, and I noticed that I was really using a lot. Disclaimers are a proactive apology or an out for what you're about to say. And they put the person speaking in a position of weakness. When you use a disclaimer, it's like saying, I don't trust what I know or think. Whatever I say after this could be wrong, and I don't want to take total responsibility for it. I'm not confident. I don't want you to secretly think I'm an idiot, so I will call myself that out loud so that you don't have to think it. I'll just acknowledge it. And it relieves the pressure of having to be right. So these sound like, I don't know about this, but this may be wrong, this may be stupid, this may be crazy, but I don't have a degree in this, but it's only my opinion. I probably did this wrong. I'm not an expert. I'm not the brightest bulb in the pack. Who am I to think? Who am I to say? Who am I to do this thing? These are all statements that we often put in front of our thoughts and opinions and feelings so that we are kind of backing down and telling someone we don't trust it. The thing about disclaimers and that people get sidetracked with and why they are fear-based thoughts in disguise is because they can lead us to think that we're flattering someone else. They can lead us to think that we're being humble. Or that, you know, hey, I'm just telling the truth. I don't have a degree in this. So we think we're being honest. And we think we're keeping expectations in check. So by making a disclaimer, it's like we have an out. It's okay if we're wrong. So in reality, these disclaimers, they put us down, they lower expectations. They're rejecting someone's gift to us if it's in response to a compliment or to positive feedback. It's sending out negative energy or fear-based energy about our self-image. And it focuses on our perceived shortcomings. It makes assumptions about what other people think of us. It gives our power away, and it keeps us small. So some questions that I'd like to offer for you to think about around disclaimers is, what are some disclaimers that you find yourself using? What are some that you hear others use? And that could be, you know, a spouse or a partner or friend, child. And what purpose are they serving? You know, how are those disclaimers serving you? So take some time to reflect on and start to notice and become aware. Where am I using disclaimers? Where am I hearing them from other people? And what purpose are they serving? And one of the fixes for the disclaimers is simply to drop them. Don't use them. That sounds pretty simple, and I don't mean to be flippant about it, but they are generally not necessary. The next one is assumptions. And assumptions stem from lack of information, or they come from information that's coming from secondhand sources. They don't have solid evidence to support them. And gone unchallenged, they provide an excuse to not take a risk and not move forward. So an example, you know, I think we're all familiar with assumptions, and we're probably familiar with that expression of to assume makes an ass out of you and me. And so there are gentler ways to put that. And actually, I came across one from Don Miguel Ruiz of The Four Agreements. And he wrote, find the courage to ask questions and to express what you really want. Communicate with others as clearly as you can to avoid misunderstandings, sadness, and drama. With just this one agreement, you can completely transform your life. So curiosity and asking questions can save you from getting coming up with assumptions. Some of the assumptions that we encounter are, it's going to be difficult. I need a degree to do that. I won't like it. He probably hates me. No one will help me. Everyone will think it's a silly idea. I'm guessing all of us at one point have used one of those or a variation of them. So here are a few questions to think about around assumptions. What assumptions do you make around ideas or people who are new to you? What assumptions that you've had before have been proven wrong? And what did you learn? So some of those questions again are, what assumptions do you make around ideas or people that are new to you? What assumptions have you had before that have been wrong? And what have you learned from those experiences? The next type that I think is particularly important for introverts that shows up for us are limiting beliefs. And what limiting beliefs are statements that put an emotional glass ceiling on our capabilities and on our capacity. Limiting beliefs are the type that is most likely to have roots from outside of ourselves. So it's not necessarily the messages we've told ourselves, it's what we've been told from others. And that could be parents or siblings, friends, coworkers, and even society at large. And often those messages demonstrate, the reason they're damaging to us is because they demonstrate and reflect a misunderstanding of what it means to be an introvert. And so we start to internalize and believe statements that are not true about us, such as somebody saying, well, you're awfully shy, or you're awfully quiet, or you're really a loner, aren't you? You don't like parties, do you? You're kind of a party pooper. You don't like to have fun. And when we hear those kinds of statements, we start to put limits on ourselves of what we think that we have the capacity to do. And so we think, I'm too shy, and we think it's true. I'm not good with people. I'm only good at this one thing. I'm not smart enough. I'm too old. I don't speak up enough. All of these are some examples of some of these beliefs that we internalize, again, often from outside sources. So some questions to ask around limiting beliefs as you reflect on this part and start to notice where they're coming up in your life are, where have limiting beliefs shown up for you? What's true about them? And what are the limitless beliefs that you hold about yourself? What do you know about yourself that there have been no limits put on you? And here I want to share, there's a fabulous card deck, if you're familiar with sort of affirmation or meditation cards. And again, this is Wayne Dyer, and they are called Inner Peace cards. This one fits the limiting beliefs very well. He says, I appreciate all that I am and all that I have. Stop focusing on what you do not have and shift your consciousness to an appreciation for all that you are and all that you do have. And I like that affirmation because it really is affirming that we can stay in that place of what's possible, as opposed to putting a lot of power and truth into what is limiting. The next to last type is lack of choice. And this is also sometimes called where we're playing kind of the victim role. And when we're in that place, we don't want to take responsibility for our situation. And that's when we can fall into language that conveys a lack of choice. We're trapped, and we can't do anything about him, her, the job, the house, the car, the government, the weather. And we feel like we're powerless. When the truth is, we are always responsible for how we choose to react. And there is nothing that for which we are not response-able. And that's a clarification I picked up from Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, where Covey talks about, if you think about the word responsible, it's really we are response-able. We are always able to respond to our situation. So times when you can tell that lack of choice is showing up in your language is making statements such as, there's nothing else I can do. It's not my fault. He made me do it. It's just the way I am. I have to do this. Or I should do what they say. To offer some questions for reflection around lack of choice, think about these. What does it feel like when I take responsibility? What does it feel like when I don't? And what are some lack of choice phrases that I've said or have heard others say? So these are some questions to help, again, start to raise your awareness. So what does it feel like when you take responsibility? What's it feel like when you don't? And what are some of the phrases and words that you've said or that you've heard others say that put you in that role of victim or not having a choice about things? The last type I want to cover is conditional statements. And these will probably sound very familiar because we've all said them from time to time. When we make conditions on our state of being, we are playing an endless waiting game. We are making action, success, happiness, peace, and fulfillment contingent on something else besides what we have in the present moment. And you can often recognize these kinds of conditional statements because they'll contain the words if, when, then. They give us an excuse not to take action, and we think that they're buying us time until things are ideal or perfect. So some examples that might crop up are, I'll be happy when, you can fill in the blank, when I get a new job, when I find a partner, when I move, when summer comes. Other examples are, once this is over, then I'll be happy. When the kids leave, then I can do what I want. If she'd just listen to me, everything would be okay. this one is a classic one. I am almost guaranteed we've all said, when I have more money, then I'll be able to. Or when I have more time, then I'll be able to do whatever it is. And then if they don't change, I don't know how much longer I can do this. So we're always putting our present state, making it conditional on things that in many cases we can't control or that are projected out, rather than appreciating and feeling gratitude for what we have in the moment. So a couple of questions to help in reflection on building your awareness about conditional statements are, what conditions have you placed on your happiness or your ability to move forward? And what is available to you right now? So what conditions have you placed on your happiness, and what's available to you right now? So those are the five main categories of self-talk, and I'm guessing and I'm hoping actually that you found some in there that felt familiar. So we covered disclaimers, assumptions, limiting beliefs, lack of choice, and conditions. And why does all of this matter? And why do we even do it? Especially since my guess is if you have a level of awareness about it, you know on some level that it's not productive. You know that it's not moving you forward. And when we let this chatter dominate our thoughts or take over, we're really engaging in small talk. And you think about introverts and small talk. When we go to networking events or parties, generally small talk is not something we enjoy. It's not our strong suit. And in some ways, when we are allowing these fear-based thoughts in, we're engaging in small talk with ourselves.
I didn't quite.
So choosing to use these words and phrases often keeps you small and takes away your power. And there's a great book by Susan Jeffers called Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway, which if you haven't read and you feel called to that title, I highly recommend it. She talks about empowering language and our word choices and refers to the process of changing them as moving from pain to power. And I really appreciate that because that's where we're staying when we dwell in some of these negative and fear-based thoughts. And why do we do it anyway? I alluded to some of these reasons before, but I just want to reiterate them. One of the reasons we kind of indulge in some of this self-talk, even when we know that it's not productive, is that it keeps us safe. It keeps us in a familiar comfort zone. It gives us the illusion of being modest. That goes to those disclaimers. It puts responsibility and choice outside of ourselves. It diminishes other people's expectations of us. It keeps us from finding out the truth. And it gives us excuses for certain behaviors and beliefs. We've covered all of those different types of self-talk, and now I want to offer you three ways, and there are many ways, and part of the workbook that I'd like to share with you has several more. But given our time and space, I'd like to give you three ideas for feeding that good dog. We spent some time with the mean dog and finding out what it has to say to us, and now it's time to switch to the good dog. The first suggestion and idea that I have for you is to find your internal base camp. So if you're familiar with mountain climbing I guess that's probably the only place, but a base camp, or in hunting, I suppose, is a main encampment that supplies shelter and a refuge and gathering place for people who are engaged in a wide range of activities such as exploring, reconnaissance, hunting, or mountain climbing. And one of the values of finding a base camp is it's basically another way of saying finding your center. Because the chatter that runs through our heads often trickles down into our bodies. And it causes physical tension in our neck, in our shoulders, our hands, our stomach. All of us carry our stress in different places. And so generally that's probably where that energy is going to trickle down to. And that's a lot of energy that's pushing through us and pulling at us. And like I said, we are good stewards of our energy. And so it's critical to find out where our energy lives. So it's helpful to identify the core place in your body where peace and calm and love reside. And I call this the internal base camp because it has the supplies and shelter you need to recharge when the energy of climbing the Cheddar Mountain becomes too much. For many people, base camp is in the area of their heart. For others, they breathe into the balance obtained through qi. They are aware of their physical center, or dantian, which is located between your belly button and the top of your pubic bone, halfway between the skin of your tummy and the skin of your back. Sometimes my base camp is actually in my eyes. I feel that tension in my eyes and I want to release it. So I consciously relax and soften my eyes. And I can literally feel the tension releasing in my mind. And I can feel that chatter slowing down. So to help you identify your base camp, think about when you close your eyes and you breathe deeply and you turn inward, where do you feel a sense of warmth and quiet? Think about what color is your base camp, what shape is it, and what paths are available to you to access it. And what will help you to remember to pay regular visits to base camp and receive fuel for the journey? So base camp can be that place you go, even if the chatter is not running amok, be proactive and connect with it. And it will probably help to slow down some of the racing thoughts before they even begin. Another place chatter shows up is in our goals and how we set our goals and what we think about our ability to achieve our goals. And often our goals can remain elusive depending on what we believe about ourselves and our capacity to achieve them. So a second offering that I give to you in terms of silencing that chatter and taking back your energy is to think of something that is an important goal for you. And think of one that you feel kind of stalled or stuck around, or that you feel like you need some clarity. Because probably if you're feeling overwhelmed or unclear about that goal or just not able to get moving, there's some chatter that's holding you back. So some simple questions to run that goal through. Number one, first name the goal. What is my goal? Acknowledge and write down, what's the chatter that's getting in the way? The next key question, and it's one of the most powerful questions on earth, is what's true? Ask yourself, what is true? What are my choices? Then based on what's true and your choices, ask, what's my new belief or intention? And an intention is what you want to experience, not necessarily what you're going to do. So what do you believe about this goal and your ability to do it? And what's your intention with having this goal? And then move to, what are my next steps? What are some simple, actionable, one foot in front of the other, steps that I can do that will help me stay within my choices and within what is true for me? And the third and final offering I have for you is morning pages, or I am pages. And if you're familiar with Julia Cameron, she has a classic book called The Artist's Way that advocates for doing an exercise called the morning pages as a way to purge your mind of chatter and random thinking, and as a way to then create space for creativity and clarity and joy to come in. It's also another method for practicing noticing the thoughts that you have as they stream onto the page rather than analyzing or obsessing. because I know I can tend to turn things around in my mind and analyze and obsess, and getting them down on paper releases some of that power. So the process of morning pages, if you're not familiar with it, is very simple. Every morning, before you do anything else, except maybe get a cup of coffee, sit down and write out 3 longhand pages of anything that comes to mind. What you write does not have to be profound or thoughtful. It doesn't even have to make sense. The critical piece is to do it consistently, without expectation or judgment, and without regard to being in the mood to write. Cameron points out that your inner censor, i.e. your chatter, will rear its head in your writing. She lays down this rule. Always remember that your censor's negative opinions are not the truth. And then we get back again to asking what's true. With commitment, Cameron says, it is impossible to write morning pages for an extended period of time without coming into contact with an unexpected inner power. They are a trail that we follow into our own interior, where we both meet our own creativity and our creator. I know when I've used morning pages, I've also used them as affirmation pages, and that's the I am pages. So I'll get the chatter out for a page or two. I'll just write down all of those thoughts that are going through my head, all those assumptions and limiting beliefs and disclaimers. And then I'll fill the rest of the pages and space with I am affirmations. So things that I want to affirm about my strengths and about what I know is true. So those are 3 offerings I have for you about helping to silence some of that chatter. First, finding your base camp, which you can carry around with you all the time, and you don't need any tools for that. Some questions to help you de-chatter your goals, to cut through some of that noise and get to something that's going to move you forward. And then lastly, the morning pages. That really is the sum total of what I wanted to share with you, and I hope that you've come away with some new ways perhaps of looking at your self-talk, new ways to examine what your relationship is with your self-talk and how it's moving you forward and how it might be holding you back. And I'd ask you to think about, once we hang up the phone or even if you stay on the line and we chat for a minute, what's the most important thing that you're taking away from the information that I just shared with you? What do you really want to remember above all else? And then what are you committed to? What do you want to be committed to? Thank you very much for joining me for this. I want to take a quick 2 minutes to tell you about how you can continue this conversation and learn more. So first, as I mentioned, I'm happy to share the workbook for this teleclass with you. You can just simply send me an email at beth@bethbelow.com, and that's Below is spelled BUELOW.com. Like I said, I'm not able to send attachments through Facebook, and I can assure you this is not a ploy to get your email address, and you won't be added to any lists. It's simply so that we can exchange the information of the workbook. And the workbook includes much of the content that I've given you, actually all of the content, as well as some additional questions to explore and resources and affirmations and such. I invite you, secondly, to consider joining me for the Introvert Entrepreneur Group Coaching Circle, which will give you a chance to explore some of your own self-talk habits and turn them around for the benefit of you and your business. I'll be starting up the next circle at the end of September, and you can watch for details on Facebook and my website, and certainly you can email me for more information. I also provide individual coaching, which is a great place to raise your awareness and begin to transform the chatter that's holding you back. And since you were gracious enough to spend this time with me, I would love to offer you a no-obligation complimentary 30-minute session if you want to give it a test drive. And finally, I encourage you to be an active participant in the Facebook community. I've learned so much from the comments that have been posted on the wall and hearing about our different experiences. So I really encourage you to continue this conversation and to add to other conversations on the Facebook wall. Thanks for listening to this special edition podcast of The Introvert Entrepreneur. I hope you'll join me on a weekly basis for our regular podcasts where I feature interviews and conversations with introvert entrepreneurs and those who work with them. Thanks for joining, and I'll see you next time.